You know, the online world is great for so many things. It's great for making you laugh, it's great for entertainment, and every now and again you come across ideas or people that literally blow your mind. But I still think some of my best thinking happens offline. So join me, Nessa, on Offline Thoughts as I chat about some of the things I think about when I'm not online. I'm really glad you're listening, and I hope you enjoy the episode. So this is the first episode of 2025. I hope you enjoyed the holidays. I sure did. As you know, I took last week off, and during my time off, I was, you know, I've been thinking about this because I followed the story since it first came out in early December. But honestly, I wanted to sort of let it percolate for a while, think about it, and then sort of solidify my thoughts. And I think I've got my thoughts solidified now. And in case you haven't, you know, heard the story, which I'd be very surprised about, because if you've spent any time on social media, or even just when you're scrolling, you know, if you're a kind of person who wakes up and just like gets the headlines in the morning, even if you don't go into the full articles, it's impossible not to have been inundated with the story of Luigi Maggioni, who is the young man. He's only like 26 at the time of the crime. He's the young man who assassinated the United Healthcare CEO, whose name was Brian Thompson. He killed him on December 4th at like in the early hours of the morning at like 6:45. And he like literally walked up to him while Brian Thompson was facing away from him, and he shot them in the back of his head, I think twice or three times. And, you know, basically Brian was killed within seconds. And then Luigi Maggioni hops onto an e-bike and cycles through a park, disappears for 5 days. And for 5 days, New York City is basically like organizing a major manhunt, trying to track him down. They find him 5 days later in a McDonald's because a McDonald's employee recognized him through things that she had seen online, like through social media pictures that had been circulating about him. And by the way, the social media pictures were like, it wasn't like a full face at that time. It was like, I think it was just like his eyes or just like his smile. It was a very small picture of him. But anyway, she recognized him from that picture. And she called it in, and they came up and they caught him, you know, in McDonald's, and he had everything on him. Like, he had the backpack he had when he committed the crime. He had the weapon that he had produced by himself. When I say produced, he used a 3D printer to make the gun. And then he also had like cash on him. He had like fake IDs on him. He had a manifesto. So they really caught him with absolutely everything they would need to nail him. And since he's been apprehended, he's been charged, or he's been indicted on 11 counts, like murder in the first degree, murder in the second degree, murder in the second degree as a crime of terrorism. And then also, in addition to his, like, those crimes, they've added on possession of like forged documents. They've also charged him with a couple of other criminal possessions of a weapon in the third and fourth degree, like three of one and one of the other. So in total, there's 11 charges against him. Now, I have to say, when I was like following the story, like reading articles, watching posts about this on like different like platforms, I was so confused about like the public like response to the crime that he's committed. Confused because, like, if you spent any amount of time on TikTok, you will have seen people like, one, like taking the piss, like just joking about the whole thing, like joking about how they would help him like escape the manhunt, how they would never turn him in, about how he's innocent. And most of that revolved around the fact that he was so good looking. And if you see like pictures of him online, he's a good looking man. He's got like his build. He's got a nice smile, nice face. Like, he's just a traditionally attractive man. So the jokes were basically surrounding the idea that they weren't going to turn him in because he was like a good looking man and he couldn't have committed these crimes because he was good looking. Now, I will say like most of that was clearly in jest. I would say another camp, though, was sort of a camp that is generally, I would say, hostile to authority. So just the idea of not colluding with the police and not trusting the police and not wanting to help them bring him to justice, or even when he was still like out there, when they still hadn't apprehended him, they were basically expressing the idea that there was no way they were going to collude with like police officials to bring this guy in, even if they believe that he did commit the crime he did, because they believe that he did it for a good reason. Basically kind of seeing him through the lens of like Robin Hood and simultaneously also like being anti-authority and anti-police. So that's the second camp. And then the second camp I saw was just like the moral dilemma, like people like questioning, like to what extent are people justified in taking the law into their own hands, especially when that legal system has shown itself to be unwilling to confront a matter, in this case, the predatory nature of the healthcare system in the US, when they've been unwilling to address a matter that's very important to people, and that leaves people basically in like terrible conditions, terrible situations, that has caused people to lose everything, like when they're trying to pay for healthcare, especially when it's a surprise, like people find out they've got like terminal illnesses or they've got chronic conditions and their insurance companies won't pay out. So, you know, the questions were around like, given that the government is clearly in cahoots with the healthcare industry, there's clearly like they've clearly bought the politicians in one way or another, primarily through lobbying and funding their campaigns, the government's not going to do anything about it. And given that it's such a massive issue that affects everyday people, is it justified then for somebody to make some kind of statement, or i.e. like assassinate somebody in this case, that triggers a response? So it's kind of like, he did a bad thing, but he did a bad thing for a good reason. And that thing might be the thing that causes policy change, causes the government to take the regulation of the healthcare industry seriously, or specifically the insurance industry seriously. So a lot of chat around that, and I'll address all those things in this episode. So after I got like over my initial surprise, and I would say surprise just because like it was so jubilant. Like the things that I saw, people were so jubilant in their support of it. It wasn't like nail biting, like, oh, like I kind of agree with him taking on the system, like the healthcare system, but I also know that he did something terrible. I have to say, maybe it's my For You page, maybe it's my algorithm, maybe it's a function of the things that I already see. But I have to say, people were like glorying in the idea that they were going to help him get away, and that they were happy that he did this. They were like kind of listing other CEOs they would want to see assassinated or murdered. They were recounting their own stories of negative experiences with healthcare providers in general, but in particular healthcare insurers, people who lost family members, loved ones, because they wouldn't pay out, or just like the predatory practices where they would just delay like approving the issuance of medication or the payment of medication. So recounting their own stories in a way that basically said like, I agree with what he did. So I was surprised about that, because usually when it comes down to like straight up murder, especially like that's done with like gun violence, usually people are pretty like somber in how they discuss things. And I think the reason why it was sort of like a semi joke, or at least on like what I was seeing, was like so like silly or jokey, I think it's because he's like a really good looking man. And I think it's also because the victim in this case, Brian Thompson, who I'll talk about, isn't like a... he isn't like the perfect or sympathetic victim. You know, he's like a super wealthy man. At the time of his death, he was making like $10 million a year. He was the head of like United Healthcare, who people feel like are the literal devil. And I don't disagree. And on top of that, he's like a middle-aged white guy who's lived like a very charmed life from an outside looking in. So people kind of thought like he was fair game, or if not fair game, like he just wasn't the kind of victim in this context, in the context of the discussion around corporate greed, the discussion around specifically the health insurance, in the context of like who the victims are of that corporate greed and the healthcare industry, he just wasn't a sympathetic character. So I think part of it, of the jokes, was because of who the victim was and who the perpetrator was or is and looks like as well. But like I said, you know, like when I thought about it intellectually, when I zoomed out of the particulars of the victim and the perpetrator, like I understand why Americans support Luigi to such a vocal and visible degree. Like ultimately, they are kind of seeing him as a hero or as somebody who's willing to like cause fear, to like strike against a broken healthcare system that has people living in one of the most wealthiest countries in the world while simultaneously being unable to afford like basic healthcare. I remember once watching this documentary and it was talking about like the American healthcare system and how it's broken, how a lot of people have been rendered like without homes, like rendered homeless because they've gone bankrupt or they've lost all their money trying to pay for healthcare, like life-giving healthcare. And basically there's like these great organizations that like a few times a year will say, we're going to be in your location on this date at that time. And they basically give like free dental care, they give free healthcare. And people traveled from all over the country. They brought their tents. They like camped out overnight because the queues to these like pop-up like charity healthcare events were so high that people were literally coming days in advance to queue to get this service. So as somebody who's only ever experienced like European healthcare system, which I have to say, like it is very good. People like quibble about like things here and there, but it is honestly fantastic. Like most of the time you don't have to pay for it if you're not working. And even in the context of the UK, even when you are working, you don't pay for it anyway. You only pay for your prescription. And when there's nothing that shows you how great the NHS, so the UK healthcare system is, then when emergency strikes, like they are so phenomenal. Like, God forbid you should have a heart attack or you should have a stroke or you should have like an accident where like bones are broken or should be diagnosed or suspected of having cancer. They are phenomenal. Where they are not so good is like routine everyday like appointments. Like you've got aches and pains and you're trying to get the bottom of where those aches and pains are. Unless you tell them you think it's cancer or you've got a history of cancer. Sometimes you might be waiting like, I don't know, like 2 weeks for an appointment or a week for an appointment or like a week for a phone appointment. Although I will say it is getting better, but it is nowhere near the kinds of things I saw in that documentary. So again, on an intellectual level, I get it. I get why they are so angry and why they are so like happy in a way, happy that somebody has had the courage to kind of do something that they probably have thought about, especially for people who have lost people under circumstances where it was preventable. So, you know, from that perspective, it's hard not to sympathize with the American public. It's hard not to sympathize with why, like the representation of what the situation is to them, like through that lens. Like I understand from that lens. What I was confused about as well was how people were viewing Luigi, like how they were like casting him as like this man of the people, this man who like came from the masses and was like the one person amongst us who was willing to like take on the healthcare industry and take on the elite, take on corporate greed and take an action that was like brave, that was courageous, that kind of put power at least symbolically back in the hands of the masses, because a lot of companies have taken down like their CEOs from their websites and people see that as a win. They see that as obviously those companies understanding that they face like physical harm and physical risk because of their practices, and people hope that through that fear they're going to change something about the way they operate. And so Luigi like being cast as this like Robin Hood, like this man of the people, like I was like, he's not though. Like, even if you agree that, like, even if you agree that violence for political aims or violence to as activism or violence to communicate a public message or to send a message to the government or to a specific industry is legitimate, I also think that the person who delivers that message matters. If the victim matters, as I said earlier, and that the reason why people don't feel that sympathetic is because of who Brian Thompson was and the kind of life that he had and his participation in the exploitation of people by the healthcare industry, and also being at the helm of one of the most like visible companies that have those predatory evil practices, then I also think that it matters who the hero, quote unquote, is. Because we're basically celebrating the idea that somebody has like put a gun to corporate greed, if you will, symbolically and physically. And that somebody, like one of us, has basically like taken one of them down a peg. Fine. It's just that Luigi is one of them. Like, no matter how you slice and dice it, Luigi is not a man of the people. He's not from the masses. Also, he clearly does not represent the average person, because this guy was born literally into that world, into the world of corporate greed, into the world of privilege. I mean, actually, if you look at his family history, it is true that his grandfather came from humble means. Like, he was, quote unquote, self-made. But Luigi himself, like that guy himself, literally is the definition of a privileged man, of like a man who was born with a silver spoon in his mouth. He attended this school called Gilman School. It's an all-boys private school in northern Baltimore. And the fees for that school alone is like $40,000 a year. Like, I don't know anybody who went to a private school where they can afford $40,000 a year. Second, he attended like the University of Pennsylvania. He graduated there with like 2 engineering degrees. So automatically that puts him in like probably like the top 20% of earners, not only because of his university degree and his education background before then, but also in terms of like the money you can expect for him to have earned straight out of college after that. So he graduates from this Ivy League institution in 2020, and then he becomes a data engineer. And he, you know, by all accounts, sounds like he was doing well at work, like he was going up the ladder, and why wouldn't he? He literally has the right background. He probably fits into that world perfectly. And he probably feels a sense of entitlement that allows him to go and get what he needs. So in terms of like raw, crude assessment of who Luigi is, like, he is not a man of the people. He's actually literally part of the elite. That's what that means. He has access to a lifestyle that many people could only ever dream of. Like, even when you look at like aerial photos of his home, it is stunning. It's like a standalone building or home with like acres of land around it, with like lots and lots of rooms. Like, it is, you know, sometimes people joke, like when you watch American TV, like as an outsider, you often feel like everybody just lives in like these mansions. Like, and it's like, regardless of who the person is, they could be like a writer at like a shitty newspaper making like no money, and then they'll film them going back to their home, quote unquote, and it's like a phenomenal home. Or they could be like a nurse and they live in a phenomenal home. Or they could be like, they could just be anybody who clearly isn't earning the kind of money that allows them to live in like central New York. And like somehow, like they still cast them like in that kind of home. Luigi lived in the kind of house that people who, like, if you were to draw what people think of like the typical American life from what they see in films, like, he lives that life, like, for real. And outside his own like personal wealth or his own like doing well for himself, like, he comes from a very wealthy family. Like, the Mangione, and actually I learned that it's not Mangione, it's Mangione. That's what somebody Italian said online, but I'll keep saying it how I say it because I don't have confirmation from Luigi. So the Mangione family itself is like a very powerful, well-known family in Baltimore especially. An example of that, or that shows that, is one, like, the family own like a multi-million dollar real estate empire. Like, they have like senior living facilities, like multiple of them, and that's basically, they made their money in healthcare. They also own like 2 golf courses. One of those golf courses is attached to a resort. They own a radio station. They own a country club. They're known to be very philanthropic. So, for example, the family gave more than $1 million to the family center at the Great Baltimore Medical Center, and a plaque is dedicated like in their honor for their generous donation. They also have been long-term donors to Loyola University in Maryland, which also has an aquatic center named after them. So when I say that he is part of the elite, or he comes from a privileged like background, I'm not even talking about like average privilege. I'm not talking about like a middle-class well-to-do family who is able to like afford a vacation once or twice a year, who is able to give their kids like violin lessons and piano lessons and dance lessons, who is able to like help their child or their children with a little bit of deposit money when it comes time to buying a home, or is able to contribute to their children's weddings. I'm not talking that kind of level. That's not what I mean when I say privilege. Like, that's privilege as well. I'm talking about like celebrity level money nearly. I'm talking about the kinds of people who are able to give away $1 million to just one institution as a donation, who are, no, honestly, like, I genuinely feel like this point is so underplayed in all the things that I've seen. So again, going back to like how he's being cast as a man of the people, like, if it was just like the middle class person that I had been describing like a minute ago, sure, I could be like, yeah, he's not a perfect like representation of the masses, but he ultimately still would kind of represent, because the kind of person I described, like the well-to-do middle class family, you know, they still rely on health insurance. Like, they can't afford to pay out of pocket. Like, I think it's interesting to note that neither Luigi nor any of his family even used United Healthcare as an insurance provider. So, like, I'm not even sure how he came to make Brian Thompson his like target, because he didn't even have anything to do with them anyway. And the reason why I bring up, or why it's relevant, like why his background is relevant, why who he is and who his family is and where he came from is relevant, it's relevant because it gives you an indication of what the likely sympathy is going to be. Like, one of the things that you will observe as you get older is that people are really a function of the social networks and of their backgrounds. And sometimes the reason why we feel like politicians are so disconnected from us, how they don't understand who we are, what we need, how they can be so ruthless and unkind and malicious in the policies that they pass or allow to stand. Like, the reason for all of that is because a lot of the time, politicians in these, like in this era and this time, are career politicians who do not come from the people. They're not one of the people most of the time. Like, look at our last prime minister in the UK, for example. It was Rishi Sunak, who had a career as an investment banker, whose wife's family is a billionaire, who he himself has lived like a life of privilege. And he really tries to underplay this point now because it suits him to do so. But when I say he's literally the definition of like the elite, like a person whose wife's father is a billionaire, because his wife's father owns like an Indian telecoms business. So when he's prime minister, it's like a game to him. Like, when he's talking about the healthcare industry in the UK, he doesn't have any idea. I don't even think he's used the NHS in the past like 20 years. Like, clearly he goes private. When he's talking about the education system, his kids aren't going to be in like public schools. His kids are going to be in private schools. When he's talking about like what cap to set on energy bills, he's got no idea of the cost or the impact of energy bills to like the average person. He's a multimillionaire who comes from a billionaire family. He literally is completely disconnected from the average person, which is why they're able to pass these policies where the average person is like, wow, this is so evil. Like, I remember even when they were contemplating like reducing pensioners like allowance for like reducing the cap that pensioners could enjoy. So right now in the UK, if you're a pensioner, you're able to pay less energy because obviously you're not earning and, you know, you're vulnerable. They're trying to remove that as well. So going back to like why it matters who Luigi is, you are a function of your like background. If you have no connection to the everyday issues that people face, if you come from the elite, if you come from a situation where you've only grown up around other uber wealthy people, other people who can afford $40,000 tuition for high school fees, whose career and track is basically guaranteed, whose families also own like millionaire companies, when you're living in like the most like beautiful gated neighborhoods and you literally have no contact outside you placing orders at McDonald's, you have no contact with the average person. You know, you have no contact with like You have no experience going to school with people who have been affected by the thing that you say is your cause. You know, like, it's very difficult to have empathy for people who you share nothing with. In fact, you kind of form part of the ruling class, because that's what it means to have wealth and money and power in a capitalistic system. It means you get to be part of the ruling class. And the way the ruling class, like, justifies its exploitation of the masses is by, like, circulating certain myths about them, you know. So, for example, you often find that people who are very wealthy will say the most outrageously unkind and insensitive things about the masses or the poor. So one of the things that they'll say is they believe that the reason why they are so successful and so wealthy is not a function of luck, like being born at the right time, at the right place, the right family, in the right social conditions, in the right network. They believe that all of it is only down to how hard they've worked. And that's why they can make statements like, they can look at poor people who've grown up in completely different circumstances, who were born to poor family members, who were born to generational trauma, who were born in poor neighborhoods with poor schools, with gun violence, with drug violence, with gang violence, with literally all these conditions that mean that the chances of them getting out of that, like, trap is so low. They can look at those circumstances and look at those people and say, the reason why you are poor is because you don't work hard enough. You don't know how to raise your children. You don't know how to have, like, enduring relationships that mean that your kids come from two-parent households. You don't know how to say no to drugs. You don't know how to say no to the street life. Like, that's the reason why they can say such disgustingly unempathetic things, because they are socialized to believe certain things because they come from a certain background. So going back to Luigi, there's no way that he's going to come from, like an elite background amongst elite people who, I can tell you for a fact, probably make their money, like, through the exploitation of other people. Because going back to what Karl Marx said about the nature of capitalism is that it can only sustain itself or continue to make money by creaming off the top of the average person's income. So an example of this is, you go to work every day. Let's say you're a lawyer, you're a solicitor. You go to work every day and you make this company, like, probably thousands of dollars every day in billable hours. They won't pay you thousands of dollars, even though you are making them thousands of dollars. They'll pay you, like, a fixed salary. You might make them in any given year, like, $200,000. And this is conservative because, you know, my partner's a solicitor and I can tell you for free, like, a lot more money is made than that. So let's say you make the company, like, $200,000. They might only pay you, like, $75,000, which means that they have kept, like, a portion of the money that you've made for them. And obviously you have to put some money towards, like, the bills that they pay that you don't pay. Like, they pay for rent, they pay for insurance, they pay for, like, resources and all these other things that make a business work. But still, the way they make money is by paying you less money than you deserve. And so for people who end up being like the Mangionis, where they have, like, multi-million dollar empires, believe you me, they didn't make that money cleanly. Like, there's going to be some dirt on their hands just because of, just even as a byproduct of the way in which money in this world or in this kind of society is made. And in the Mangione case in particular, you know, somebody did a great video that I found online where they were looking at their senior living facilities, and they basically were looking at how they performed, like, against other senior living facilities, and they literally had the worst reviews. They had terrible reviews. People were saying things like, elderly people were being left in diapers for hours because they weren't staffing them enough, or people were experiencing decline at a greater rate because they weren't being given the care that they should have been getting, that the living conditions were cramped, that there wasn't enough staff to properly care for other people. Again, this represents a way of making profits at the expense of people, because obviously all those things cost money, like having the right staff, the right size facilities, like having like just the right level of resources costs money. And clearly they would rather save money on those fee, on those resources, than provide the proper care that people need to live a fulfilling life in the final years of their lives. Again, it's a representation of how companies that go on to make millions of dollars often do it at the expense of people. And so the Mangione family, and by extension Luigi, who's a beneficiary of that lifestyle, is necessarily going to have the right sets of beliefs that allow them to continue these practices. And then also Luigi in particular, coming from that background, coming from that elite society and forming part of that elite ruling class, if you will, he is going to have certain sets of beliefs about people, about poor people, about the masses, that I tell you for free are going to be unpalatable if they were to be ever revealed. And also when you read his manifesto, like, I mean, I don't even know what the right version is. I've seen so many versions of it online, but they share a common like thread. It's clear that he has a certain sense of God complex, a certain sense of savior complex. And again, that's a reflection of how he sees himself, not as Robin Hood, like speaking up on behalf of like us poor people, us the masses, more of like the smartest, like most courageous, bravest guy who's the only person who's found the courage to go and do something about it. Like if you listen to the messaging is very, very different. It's not one of like, I'm rising amongst you and I'm going to speak for us. It's very much somebody who already sees himself as a powerful ruling class person who has agency, who is like unique in his bravery and courage and ability to like take on the system. You know what I mean? So I spend so much time belaboring this point about his background because I honestly do feel like it impacts his motivations for the assassination, and it should shape the lens through which we see things to a certain extent. And it also means that, you know, like obviously as the months go by, as he gets closer to his trial date, there's going to be like stuff dug up on him. Like right now, he's shut down a lot of his social media accounts. I don't know if he shut them down or the authorities have shut it down, but they're going to dig and dig and dig and find every piece of information that makes him look bad and present it to the public. And what the public will need to turn against Luigi or to be less sympathetic are things that show us that he actually isn't our hero. I mean, this guy Touré, who has a podcast, also did like a really good video where he's talking about some like the social indicators, like social media indicators that tell you like the kinds of political beliefs he had outside this assassination or outside this murder. And the evidence right now points to somebody who like had conservative views, was Republican, for all intents and purposes, like had no issue or had no axe to grind with like the healthcare industry or like with corporate greed. Even his roommate, who was his roommate up until like 2020, 2021, also said that he wasn't a particularly political person. And so like what that tells me is that chances are that this is like a personal thing to him. Like, I don't know why he chose Brian Thompson. That part isn't clear yet. It seems though that like things started to go wrong for him somewhere between like 2020 and 2023. We definitely know that he faced like chronic back pain, and that in 2023 he had like spinal surgery, and that the surgery went well, but that he still suffered or still experienced pain. Somewhere after 2023 and up to December 2024, he seems to have gone just like completely like offline, outside his normal social network. For example, his mother reported him missing in San Francisco, which means that he clearly withdrew entirely from his family and from his like friends and from his life. And so you know, like, it's unclear yet exactly what happened between 2023 or whether his process of radicalization, like, preceded that. Maybe it had been going on even as late as 2020. Although from, like, the interviews with his roommate and his friends, it doesn't sound like that's when that happened. It sounds like it's been in the last year. But still, you know, for me, when I read all that, when I put all those pieces together, for me, it just feels like another example of male violence. Like, I don't personally think he has any interest in, like, changing the system. And if he did have interest in changing the system, you would expect that to have been reflected in other areas of his life. That's what I mean when I say, like, there doesn't seem to be any other examples or signs that he was politically minded or politically active. Because usually violence for the average person who cares about life, who cares about not doing terrible things, usually even when they resort to violence, it's like as a last resort. They've done everything else. They've protested. They've gone through the proper channels, and they're at the end of their rope and they decide to resort to violence. Like, that feels more like somebody who is interested in changing things for everybody. To me, it feels more like the profile of like a school shooter. And the reason I say this is, like, okay, if we think about the other actions he could have taken, he could have turned to activism. He could have been like out there in the streets marching, using his political connections and his money and his wealth to like start a charity or an organization or a grassroots organization, or even spend some of his money and some of his political capital, social capital, in lobbying government. Or I don't know, he could have like tapped his cousin. He's got a cousin who's a senator. He could have tapped him and tried to see if he can sort of lobby the government through that way. He could have used his status to like amplify his voice. He also, by the way, could have turned the violence against, like, if the aim is to make a statement that triggers or change in some way, he could have turned the violence on himself. So it's unclear why he needs to go and murder somebody to make a message when he could have, like, turned the violence against himself in front of, for example, imagine that he went in front of the United Healthcare, like, headquarters, or went to that conference and turned violence against himself before he did it. Or on social media, he had left messages that said this is the reason why he was doing it. He still would have been perpetrating violence in pursuit of a grander message or a political statement or a statement targeted towards a specific industry. But instead of hurting somebody, he could have just hurt himself. Do you get me? So it's not as though like violence only has to be turned against other people. And even if, like, giving him the benefit of the doubt, which I don't think he deserves, even if we were to give him the benefit of the doubt, we're like, okay, he was just so moved by his own personal experiences with the healthcare industry or with the healthcare with the health insurance companies, that he was like, you know what, actually, I've been taking for granted how the poor, like, if I am suffering and I am from the elite and I'm struggling to have my treatment approved and paid for by the insurance companies, never mind what the average person must be experiencing, let me go and do something about it. I'm going to go and make a statement about it by enacting violence. Like, even in the context of altruism, let's say he's doing it for the benefit of all of us, you're supposed to be effective. You're supposed to believe in effective altruism. You're trying to do something that is not only good but effective. So what's the point of doing something good if nobody benefits from it? It implies you're only doing it to assuage your own sense of guilt or to feel good about yourself. But because it's not positively impacting other people, because it's not having any impact, you could say that you're not truly being altruistic. You're kind of being self-centered in that you are prioritizing having the moral high ground and feeling good about yourself over like taking action that actually changes things and makes things for people better. In his case, effective altruism would look like him doing something that actually did have a lasting impact. Because the way he's gone about this, one, it means that he is going to rot in prison for decades. And if he doesn't rot in prison for decades, it'll also be a function of the fact that he comes from a very wealthy, privileged background and that he's able to afford the kinds of lawyers and the kind of like solicitor or counsel that the average person could only dream of. So again, even that will amplify the fact that he's not one of us or of the masses. But if he does end up running away for years, like, believe you me, like 30 years from now, when people are talking about the story, they're not going to be talking about like United Healthcare or how he had an impact on the healthcare industry or how he caused like legislative changes around private healthcare and how he brought like socialized healthcare to the. That's not going to happen. Like, I guarantee that's not going to happen. They're going to throw the book at him because ultimately the ruling class are not going to let even a member of their own bring down the private healthcare industry. Absolutely not. Or allow the message to prevail that you can kill in the name of something. Even like legit political organizations that do things legitimately for the benefit of the masses, even they are like stopped by the government. Even they are stopped by the police. Even they are targeted by the legislation. Legislation, for example, that makes it difficult for them to protest. Never mind like a lone wolf who decides to put a gun at the back of like a wealthy CEO's head and pull the trigger because he feels personally strifed by this person, even though he had no contact with them and he wasn't even insured by their company. I don't know. Like, I just don't see this. I don't see this as being the moment in which the discourse and the practice of the healthcare system in the US changes. It just isn't, for all the things that I've just described. And also, you know, I personally believe that evil begets more evil. Like, I can't think of a civil rights organization that has started with murder. You know, like, I genuinely can't think of a single one. I can't think of like Black civil rights. I can't think of like LGBT civil rights. I can't think of any other like grassroots mass movement that has gone on to change like society that has started with a lone wolf murdering somebody in the early hours of the morning in that way, in that cold, calculated way, you know? And part of the reason why is that, like, even if this was to grow into a movement, which I don't think it is, like, people will always be conflicted or divided because of the murderous roots and the moral decay at the center of the movement. It also means that raising money for such a cause or mobilization of such a cause is going to be very difficult because people are potentially funding terrorism if convicted. Like, if Luigi is convicted under the terrorism charge as well, then people, even if a movement was to be formed under his name and people donated to that cause, they would literally be funding terrorism. And whilst many people are like happy that he has like the healthcare industry or healthcare industry like leadership fearful, many people also feel great empathy for Brian Thompson on a human level. Like, he was the father of two sons. His family describe him as like an incredibly loving, generous, talented man who lived life to the fullest, who touched many people's lives. Also, when you look at his personal progression, it seems like he was a real hard worker. Like, he was named chief executive in 2021, but he had been at the company since 2004. So he worked all the way up from the bottom, and he ended up being chief executive after nearly 20 years of work. And so a lot of people, especially people who believe in the American ideal and the American dream, to them, that's an embodiment of what that means. It means being able to be somebody who can go in as an intern, and then 20 years later, through hard work and dedication and commitment, you can one day go on to be the CEO of a powerful company making millions a year. So people on many levels are going to be empathetic towards Brian Thompson, and they're going to be conflicted in such a way that means that associating with this on a public level, because I know people associate themselves and speak about this on social media, but I honestly don't see this translating into real life. I don't see them going into work and expressing these views and those views not having a social cost to them. Because again, Luigi has made the issue toxic through the means with which he tried to get quote unquote justice, or through the means that he tried to do something about it. He's made it basically something that is always going to be divisive, that it's going to be something that's going to be very difficult to rally around, because many people are going to always be conflicted about the way he went about it and the loss of life and loss of innocent life that resulted because of his actions. And I say innocent life, like, very intentionally, because like I said at the top of the episode, like, yeah, Brian Thompson wasn't a perfect victim in that he did represent kind of like, you know, corporate greed in that way. Even somebody making $10 million at a company where I'm sure somebody else is making like $30,000 a year is unseemly. But outside of that, like, I think a lot of people understand that Brian Thompson is symbolic. And by that, I mean, like, executing him doesn't make sense because even as like the highest ranking employee at United Healthcare, he at the end of the day is still an employee, and he's not going to have the level of influence that Luigi's actions imply, in the sense that when you look at a company or a group like United Healthcare, right? I looked this up and they have a net worth last year of $464 billion, like billion with a B. Brian Thompson made like literally nothing in comparison to that. So it's unclear why somebody who is literally a cog in the machine, in the sense that even with his murder, the company literally had his job posted within a few days. One. Secondly, the most they could offer as a reward for a company that makes $464 billion last year alone, the most they would offer for a reward that led to the capture of the person who killed him, who murdered him, was like $10,000. Like, that in itself speaks to the disregard their corporations have for people as a whole, and the true level of influence that even the highest ranking employees have on a machine like United Healthcare. So in that context, like, him, Luigi, killing Brian Thompson doesn't even make sense in the terms of like wanting change. Like, it's almost like Brian Thompson is like a lamb, like a lamb that's been sacrificed, even though we know that that sacrifice is going to have very little impact because that lamb never controlled anything anyway. It's kind of like how the United States president is powerful, especially after they leave office, in the sense that the political power they have is going to be incredible. Like, I remember reading somewhere that Hillary Clinton, after she left office as Secretary of State, and after she ran like the second time, or and even between her running the first time and the second time, that she literally was commanding like tens of thousands of dollars for speeches. So yeah, there's a lot of power in that office, in the sense of you can make a lot of money after that, and you also have a lot of political influence. But you no way are able to change like the American system. Like, we understand that the president, even being the president of the United States, has very limited power. That's why they need to go through Congress. That's why they need to go through the Senate. That's why at times they resort to using executive privilege. And even their use of executive privilege can be like basically undone by the person who comes in next. Like, there's huge rails around the kinds of power they can exercise. And by the way, that's even in terms of like things that people or the masses have massive support for. So even if like a president listened to the people and they were like, do you know what, the people want to withdraw from Gaza, or want to stop supporting Israel's killing of Gazans, like, the president still couldn't do that unilaterally, because ultimately that's U.S. policy that precedes and goes over the pay grade of an individual president. Or let's say a president was like, do you know what, I want to just stop funding the military. Like, literally none of those things would ever happen, because it's at those moments that you see that the president is a symbolic figure in many respects. The machine still moves without the president, you know, still moves regardless of what the president wants. And in the corporate sphere, you can see that happening as well. So for example, I've talked about Bill Gates before, but even Bill Gates, who literally founded Microsoft, he was removed from a company that he started because the board disagreed with actions that he took. I mean, he was basically was having indecent relationships with employees. So anyway, even he, the person who founded the company, doesn't have control of his own company after a certain point, especially when that company becomes a public company, as is United Healthcare Group. So the idea that an individual employee should be murdered so that the company should change its policies, especially when that company is like a massive machine like United Healthcare Group that makes like $464 billion a year. Literally, Brian Thompson means nothing to them. That's why they could replace him so quickly. That's why they could offer so little money to catch the person who killed him. And that's why even like outside like a few posts on their website for like a couple of months, I guarantee you like 5 years from now, they will not be even discussing or mentioning him at all. So even through that lens, like Luigi's actions, honestly to me, don't feel revolutionary. They don't feel smart. They don't feel strategic. They don't feel like somebody with a grand plan to change things for the masses. To me, again, like I said, it feels very much like a school shooter profile, like a lone male who is frustrated with his personal circumstances and decides to take violence or revenge out on innocent people to feel better about his helplessness or to feel better about the frustrations in his life. And I genuinely think, like, despite his grand manifesto and the things that he said to the media so far, like 10 years from now, 20 years from now, he will not be remembered as a revolutionary, as somebody who made an impact on the healthcare system of the United States. I think he'll be remembered through the lens that we see people like the Unabomber, because the Unabomber also had a message, by the way. He was talking about how he believed that technology was eroding the social fabric that connected people and that it was undermining people's well-being. And basically he was posting like bombs in protest of technology, in protest of the ways in which technology corrupts people's lives and our connections and our relationships and the human condition. Well, you know, guess what? That's not the message that people remember about him. That's not what people think about when they think about the Unabomber. You know, all that mess, all that key message, that aim, that political statement was lost through the actions that he perpetrated. Like, all people see after the dust has settled was the tremendous acts of violence, the innocent lives taken, and his message falls by the wayside. And I genuinely think that that's what's going to happen with Luigi. Right now, we might be talking about it now, but I guarantee you, like, when this all settles, what people will remember is the good-looking man who was born into a life of privilege, who had literally everything at his fingertips, who decided to go and murder in cold blood. Like, the healthcare chat, the justice chat, the challenging corporate greed chat, all of that will not be remembered. And by the way, you know, I will say before I conclude that, you know, how he looks is also like a massive factor in this. Like, we clearly have a bias for people who are good looking, and we have a bias for people who are wealthy. And so because he is wealthy and he is good looking, people have extended a level of understanding and sympathy that in other circumstances they would not extend. Like, if he was some like pudgy, unattractive, like sweaty, like overweight boy or guy, I wouldn't say boy because he really is a man, he's 26. Like, I guarantee the level of empathy, especially from like the adoring gay men and the adoring straight women who are like literally fangirling him and fanboying him, all that would go away. And also, people generally are more empathetic when people are good looking. So they're trying to understand why. You know, people sometimes find it difficult to understand that people who are morally corrupt or morally bankrupt or who have like violent tendencies sometimes commit acts of violence because it feels good for them. Like, it isn't necessarily because there's like a grander message. It's because it feels good. Like, the school shooters, when they're killing those people, to some extent, obviously, it's a reflection of the suffering they're feeling inside, but it's also a reflection that they enjoy and want to kill people. Not everybody feels bad for doing terrible, heinous acts. And I feel like because Luigi Mangione is such a good-looking man who comes from such a wealthy family, he kind of suffers from what I described in my Kanye West episode, in that people kind of don't see them through a lens of being mentally disturbed. And even in the case of Kanye West, it's almost like his bipolar illness and his mental health issues are kind of seen as like a side show or like a side conversation, as opposed to being the key determining factor of his actions. Because when he's on medication, he clearly behaves very differently. And with Luigi Mangione, like, when you look at the timeline of how these things came to be, his removal from his own like friendship circle and family circle, the fact that his mother reported him missing in mid-November of 2024 because she hadn't heard from him in so long, and the fact that his friends hadn't heard from him for so long, that there are social media posts from his friends saying, "I haven't heard from you in a while and I hope that you're okay," clearly indicate, in addition to like some of the postings that he made, where he's kind of like taking on this new voice and speaking about things he never spoke about before, and moreover speaking about them in very manic, irrational like ways, clearly he's mentally disturbed. Like, clearly there's something going on that will be revealed as time goes on. Even the idea, for me, the key indicator that somebody is mentally unwell or mentally disturbed in that period, at least, is choosing to represent yourself when you've got federal charges against you. Like I was watching a video about the rate of conviction when federal charges are brought against you. When the Fed brings charges against you, like, they have like a 97 plus conviction rate. And so the idea that you think you can beat them, who have literally decided they're going to throw the book at you, you'd think that it's a good idea, especially in the early stages when you're most vulnerable, when they're still deciding what charges to bring against you. You're out here representing yourself in court despite having access to tremendous wealth. That in itself already told me that there was clearly something mentally ill with this person. That being said, though, you know, I'm not going to give him a pass and say, because I suspect he's mentally disturbed, that he should not be held accountable for the murderous tendencies that he showed, for the killing that he perpetrated. Because again, it's kind of casting people with mental illness with the same brush, in that many people suffer tremendous losses in life. And that's what kind of disturbed me as well about this. It's like, how are you going to suffer for 3 years, and that's enough for you, like, with the back pain for 3 years, and that's enough for you to like resort to murder? Like, there are people who suffer for years and years and years, for decades, who have generational trauma, who have the most difficult circumstances relative to Luigi Mangione, and they never ever turn to violence at all, never even think about resorting to violence. Similarly, there are people, other people with mental illness, who are going through mental health crises and who, you know, are going through those difficult phases in their lives. And again, like, they never turn to violence as well. So whilst I want to like keep that at the back of my head, like, when this story is progressing and we're getting more information, I don't want to dismiss that as though it's like an irrelevant piece of information. But I also simultaneously don't want to excuse his behavior and just say that there's no accountability to be had because he might have been going through a health crisis or a mental health crisis. I'd be very interested, as well as the case progresses, whether his legal team, because he has now gotten a legal team, whether they'll bring that up as a defense. I personally suspect that they will, because outside of that, I don't really see what leg he can stand on, especially because they literally caught him with absolutely everything they needed to convict him. Like, he didn't throw anything away. He wasn't trying to hide anything. And maybe he might have anticipated that he was going to jail or prison anyway, and he was okay with that. But after he has served some time, because don't forget, it's going to be at least a couple of years, or minimum a year, until he is in court facing his charges. Maybe time in that cell and seeing the reality of the media attention fade, and looking ahead at a decade or decades of time spent in that cell with no freedom, with no privileged life that he's grown accustomed to, very isolated because he's probably going to be on a separate ward. Maybe he's going to change his tune and realize that actually this is not the civil rights movement moment that he thought it was going to be. You know, that he isn't going to, like, the feelings of hero worship that he imagined he was going to have isn't enough to sustain him through like 20, 30 years of prison time that he might do. You know, so for me personally, you know, I am not particularly emotionally invested either way. I care insofar as I'd be very interested to see where the discourse around the healthcare goes. I'd be interested to see whether the terrorism charge sticks. I'd be interested to see how much time he ends up getting. I'll be interested in seeing how long the media attention is sustained. And also as well, like in the longer term, like what the legal defense is going to be, if he's going to still be standing 10 toes down on the fact that he did it for us, the people, and it was like a strike against the system, or whether he's going to retreat into saying that he was undergoing a mental health crisis that led him to behave in ways that he never would have otherwise. And so with that, I'm going to wrap up this week's episode. Thank you so much for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed the episode and were able to listen to the very end. If you did like the episode, I'd really appreciate it if you left me a 5-star review wherever you get your podcast from. It just helps people find the podcast, and if you could share it with somebody you think might find it interesting. I'll be back next Monday as usual. So until then, have a great week and speak then.